Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It strikes me that if we've got an open mind, if we're listening to each other, if we're not engaging in sort of the tit for tat and trying to score political points during the next several hours, that we might be able to make some progress.
President Obama bringing Republicans and Democrats together today for a summit on health care. This began just a short time ago. We're going to play a brief excerpt of President Obama right now, about a minute's worth after that little tiny bite that we just heard. Then we will hear Lamar Alexander, Republican from Tennessee, and then we'll talk about it with James Fallows, national correspondent for The Atlantic. So here is a minute of the president setting up the basic concept, reminding people of the basic concept of his approach to health reform.
The basic concept is that we would set up an exchange, meaning a place where individuals and small businesses could go and get choice and competition for private health care plans, the same way that members of Congress get choice and competition for their health care plans. For people who couldn't afford it, we would provide them some subsidies. But because people would have some pooling power, the costs overall would be lower because they'd be in a stronger position to negotiate. We think it is a plan that works with the existing system, the employer-based system, the private health care system, but allows a lot of people who currently don't have health care to get health care. More importantly, for the vast majority of people who do have some health care, it allows them to get a better deal.
President Obama minutes ago at his health care summit with Democrats and Republicans, but listen to how Tennessee Republican Senator Lamar Alexander views the entire event.
I was trying to think about if there were any kind of event that this could be compared with, and I was thinking of the Detroit Auto Show that you had invited us out to watch you unveil the latest model that you and your engineers had created and ask us to help sell it to the American people, and we go and you do that, and we look at it and we say, hey, that's the same model we saw last year, and we didn't like it, and neither did they, because we don't think it gets us where we need to go, and we can't afford it. So as they also say in Detroit, again, we think we have a better idea.
Lamar Alexander minutes ago. James Fallows, national correspondent, correspondent for The Atlantic, joins us now, a former presidential aide himself to President Carter. When James Fallows was last on this program last month, he was talking about his Atlantic article on how America is always allegedly in decline and is always about to bounce back. We'll also touch on his new article about China and cyber warfare if we have time. Remember, the reason Google might pull out of China is not censorship. It's cyber spying on private citizens who use Google. Dick Cheney himself couldn't have thought of anything as vast as how China watches people online. And James takes it very seriously as a matter of both privacy and national security. So hi, James Fallows. Welcome back to WNYC.
Nice to speak with you. Nice to talk with you.
Will you give us your thoughts, first of all, on the Kabuki dance now playing out between the president and members of Congress?
Well, I've been watching over the past, what has been, half an hour, sounds like the past, 48 days to see it unfolding. And it is what I just don't know yet, whether this is going to end up seeming after a few hours like that Baltimore House Republican meeting that Obama went to a month ago, where he was able to position himself as being Mr. Reasonable. But so far, we've heard only each side giving its version of reality, whether it's on how the Senate is designed to function or whether people actually want health care reform. So believe it or not, I'm going to be watching this for the next while.
Is it too cynical to write it off as mere partisanship, posing as bipartisanship?
I think that would be, of course it is that on both sides, but the question is, what after that? The Obama administration is looking for some way to get this bill through, and they're preparing themselves, since it seems as if they're going to get no Republican support whatsoever, preparing themselves to find some parliamentary way, including the famous reconciliation option, to do it, even though the Republicans are all against it. And I think as a step for doing that, this is probably a sensible thing for the administration to say, look, we're trying. We're going to listen and see what you have to say.
Can you think of anything in your experience or in your knowledge of American history quite like this event? Is there a model or a precedent that the White House is hoping to draw on for today?
There is something a little bit similar. Back in, at the dawn of time, when, as you mentioned, I worked for Jimmy Carter as a speechwriter, it was the era of having the initial energy crisis, the first oil shocks. And one of the things Carter spent his first year doing was trying to have a national energy plan. And there were meetings sort of like this. It wasn't as block-entrenched a partisan division back then. And some of the differences were more sort of oil states versus northeastern states and coal states versus non-coal states. But there were some sessions like this. The difference is it wasn't a lifetime broadcast. There wasn't Twitter to have these all these various feeds. So I guess the fact of omnipresent communication means that by definition, whatever happens now is different from what we've seen before.
We have another clip just in that I want to play. Oh, is it ready? Yes. Okay. Just happened, apparently, between the same two people who we heard before, the president himself and Republican Senator Lamar Alexander of Tennessee. We're going to hear about a minute and a half now of them going back and forth on what the Congressional Budget Office said about the cost of these plans going up or down. Listen.
Even without the subsidies, it's estimated by the Congressional Budget Office that the plan we put forward would lower the costs in the individual market for the average person who's just trying to buy health insurance and they're not lucky enough to work for a big company, would lower their costs by between 14% and 20%. So, Lamar, when you mentioned earlier that you said premiums go up, that's just not the case according to the Congressional Budget Office.
Mr. President, if you're going to contradict me, I ought to have a chance to. The Congressional Budget Office report says that premiums will rise in the individual market as a result of the Senate bill.
No. This is an example of where we've got to get our facts straight.
That's my point.
Exactly. So let me respond to what you just said, Lamar, because it's not factually accurate. Here's what the Congressional Budget Office says. The costs for families for the same type of coverage as they're currently receiving would go down 14% to 20%. What the Congressional Budget Office says is that because now they've got a better deal, because policies are cheaper, they may choose to buy better coverage than they have right now, and that might be 10% to 13% more expensive than the bad insurance that they had previously.
And on from there, between the president and Senator Lamar Alexander and James Fallows, national correspondent for The Atlantic. I mean, it's remarkable what we just heard. It was really wonky. I don't know what it's going to change, but I don't remember any time that the president of the United States sat down, and he's sitting, not standing at a podium, as the Republicans asked that he not. He's sitting down having this kind of debate with Alexander and a whole bunch of others from Congress.
You're right, and I was hearing that exchange actually just before you and I began talking, and I thought that was extraordinary in a couple of ways. One is the tone of Lamar Alexander's presentation, both in his initial quite long opening remarks, and that exchange was borderline disrespectful, I will say. That usually there is in D.C., regardless of partisanship, there is a kind of deference to the president as a person, you know, sometimes to an unhealthy degree, but that's the reality. And Senator Alexander's comments were as close to breaking that norm as I recall ever seeing. But then Obama had the facts on his side and saying, no, you're actually wrong about how this is laid out. And I think that Obama potentially has the strength that Bill Clinton also had, and in a way that Jimmy Carter didn't. The three of them, Carter, Clinton, and Obama, are good in the details of things, but Clinton and Obama, unlike Carter, were able usually to explain the details in an accessible way. So if a lot of the disagreement on this bill is over fundamental facts. For example, Senator Coburn recently saying we need to have tort reform in there, and there actually is tort reform in the bill. Maybe there is some advantage to Obama in saying, look, I hear you, and here's why on fact X, Y, and Z, I disagree.
Can you go deeper and say what kind of tort reform is in the bill?
I personally cannot, but John Cone, who is my of the New Republic, who is my guru in all these things, says that this has been saying that Coburn's argument is not congruent with what is in the bill.
Jonathan Cohn is great, by the way, from the New Republic. We had him on to talk healthcare just the other day, and we think he is is he going to be on tomorrow? Is that who we're having? He may actually be back on the show tomorrow. I'm not sure. But since no one expects real compromise, we don't expect the president and Lamar Alexander to come out at the end of the day and say, you know, you're pretty much right, really, about your cost estimates. You're just a little bit off. So we're going to compromise, meet in the middle. Since nobody expects that, what progress can come out of it toward a health reform bill, or what good can come out of it for our polarized politics in a larger sense, if you think anything?
Well, if you accept the premise, both number one, that there's not going to be any agreement on substance, and if you have, for example, the initial Republican argument from Alexander, now Coburn, being number one, there has to be starting from scratch. And number two, the American public is basically against doing any of this at all. So if you accept there's not going to be agreement on substance, and number two, you accept that as a voting bloc, there is simply no prospect whatsoever of any of the Republicans voting for this thing, then it means that if you're the Democrats, you think this is a necessary, you think it's a valuable bill on the merits, and politically you need to get something done too, then I think this becomes a procedural demonstration that you're trying as hard as you can to find some way to have other than a straight party line vote. And it then means that when a straight party line vote comes, as it apparently is going to come, you can say, we tried, we did our best. And you can wage then the midterm election campaign on saying, we did our best, there was simply no give on the other side, and judge us on the results.
All right. Well, we'll be following it very closely, of course, here on the show and on the station throughout the day. And again, tomorrow morning on this program when it's all been said and done. And James Fallows, national correspondent for The Atlantic. Unfortunately, we're not going to get to the China cyber warfare discussion today because we had more to work with in terms of clips from the event already than I thought we would. So I hope you'll come back and have that China cyber war conversation.
And you can ask Jonathan Cohn about that, and then he can defer to me.
That's fair enough. You can pat each other on the back all the way to Alaska. Thank you.
Right.
Thanks a lot, James Fallows.
My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come.